Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My next guest has written a wistful book released for this St. Patrick's Day about the disappearance of old-fashioned Irish pubs in Ireland. It's called A Pint of Plain, Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub by Bill Barrich, author of 7 books and a resident of Dublin. Bill, welcome to WNYC.
Well, thank you, Brian. Happy St. Pat's.
There are plenty of bars and restaurants in Ireland, but you have a certain kind of pub in mind in writing this book. Can you describe that pub?
Well, I can indeed. I like so many other Americans, you know, and when I moved to Dublin, I was steeped in the great music and the literature and movies like The Quiet Man. So I had in mind the quintessential traditional space, which would be a very humble sort of pub with a democratic atmosphere, very quiet, no music unless somebody happened to pick up a fiddle and decide to play, with a publican who lived upstairs and took good care of his customers and with no entertainment really except conversation and drink.
And was there something consistent about the culture of those pubs a generation ago from the urban blocks of Dublin to the rural towns that barely had indoor plumbing at the time?
Well, there would be a great similarity. Of course, the city pubs in Dublin and larger cities like Sligo would have, a bit more, I don't want to say flash, but they'd be a bit more decorated. Country pubs a generation ago were as plain as could possibly be. But they did share, I think, a sense of being a community center. The pub, the big change is pubs in Ireland are now more or less aligned with the leisure industry. They provide entertainment. And formerly the idea was go to the pub and the entertainment would be to meet a friend or make a new friend or to hear a bit of music. But there was nothing beyond the talk and the drink and the community.
Things change in every culture. And I wonder if this is such a loss or if all Irish people experience it as such a loss. We have a comment already for you on our webpage, Randolph from Dublin, who writes, "In Ireland, we're fed up being told that our culture is somehow endangered because we'd rather not frequent local versions of those awful Irish bars." He spelled it O-I-R-I-S-H, or those awful Irish bars you find in Boston and New York. Why Americans can't get it into their heads that Ireland is a modern, progressive European country. Nothing more, nothing less. It's deeply mystifying. What do you say to Randolph from Dublin?
The kind of pubs he's citing are precisely the kind of pubs that I find depressing. the sort of pseudo, there's a great overlap between the kind of Irish pub you see in Boston and the kind that you see in Dublin these days, in that they are like an American sports bar, or can be, with flat-screen TVs and rugby on and piped-in music. But I think, the thing that I think he makes a good point in that, Ireland was so poor for so long that when the now dead Celtic Tiger began to roar, there was an honest and understandable desire to be part of a broader world, to have cafes and good restaurants and, all the other amenities that you find in a modern European city. But I think, in a way, Ireland kind of tossed out the baby with the bathwater. There's a publican in my book who still runs a traditional pub, and he made the point. He said, greed has the Irish in their grip. And a kind of greed and arrogance, I think, set in along with all this modern trendiness. And I think certain values that the pub kind of stands for were and are under threat.
Talk about the values, because when we hear greed in this day and age, in this country right now, it's being applied to million-dollar bonuses being given to failed AIG executives. You're talking about little pub owners.
We're talking about little pub owners?
You are, right?
I'm talking about corporate takeovers of pubs.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking about partnerships owning pubs as opposed to a single publican who's paying attention to the business.
So are they not so family-owned anymore in Ireland?
No, that's changed almost entirely. It used to be roughly 9 out of 10 countrywide were family-owned. But in part, because so much money has rushed into Ireland, children of publicans have many more options. And, you know, they don't automatically take over the pub and run it. Another thing to look at, too, is, you know, in the countryside, pubs are dying at the rate of one a day. And you might say, well, that's, you know, that's just changed, too. But the change is that the Irish village is beginning to cease to exist. And what you're getting is suburbanization on a mass scale. So the Greenbelt in Ireland is under threat. All those beautiful images that we see on the travel, you know, the travel brochures, you know, less and less of that land is in protection or is in farmland. It's now cookie-cutter houses. And the people who live there are commuters, and they don't use the pub in the same way. And if there is a pub, it's likely to be a franchise pub.
My guest on WNYC, Bill Barrich from Dublin, author of A Pint of Plain, Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. Any publicans or anyone else want to call in? I didn't say Republicans. Any publicans or anyone else want to call in? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know, Bill, I had a producer who was the daughter of an Irish pub owner, and she used to talk to me about this. And one big factor, she said, was the Celtic Tiger boom itself, because in the old perpetual hard times, people would go and drink with their spare change. As Irish people got more affluent, they wanted to go out to eat. So the pubs changed into restaurants in many cases. Think that was a big factor?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the leading publicans who owns about 20 or 30 pubs in and around Dublin has said that if you hope to survive in the current climate, you're going to have to do 50% of your business in food. And that's a big change, and not necessarily a bad one.
And as people became more sophisticated in their tastes, even the Irish wanted arugula and a pinot noir instead of a pint of Guinness and a toasted ham sandwich, you think?
I say some, not all. But there's an overlap, and the same people that are wanting the arugula and the pinot noir, you know, will still go to the pub to, you know, to hang out once a week. I mean, I think it's something mm-hmm. like, 80%+ of the Irish say they visit a pub at least once a month.
And there are other changes, too, in Ireland, in the culture and in the law in the last generation. For example, how much did the smoking ban hurt or the severe clampdown on drunk driving? Well, maybe that affected the businesses, you know, particularly with the rural pubs, as there was no other way for people to get there apart from driving, which had been the tradition for decades.
Well, indeed, they're two separate issues. The smoking ban, it's funny. I mean, the pubs that's really hurt are what they call the landlocked inner-city pubs, where they don't have an outdoor space. Now, a pub in my village or my neighborhood had a big backyard or garden that they really didn't use, and they put in heaters and picnic tables, and their business just about doubled. So it's a kind of a double-edged sword. Now, the driving thing is a funny one. The ones who suffer most, as you say, are people who can only get to the pub. And there's a great deal of sympathy for particularly the old bachelor farmers who, you know, for ages have been coming into town to collect their mail and buy some groceries and stop at the pub for a pint or two. And in fact, the local police, the guards, are usually pretty good about it. They will know everybody who's coming into a pub by and large. And they will know that, you know, that Farmer O'Grady is fine, he'll have his two pints and he'll go home. They're not going to bother with him. What scares people is that the police, on a broader scale, do these kind of set up roadblocks and do random testing. And they also sometimes do it in the morning. So if you've been home, not at a pub, and you've had a drink and a half bottle of wine, you may be legally drunk in the morning. And that's what frightens people more than the kind of village atmosphere that's always been around, where the guards look after. Because, to be honest, you could close every pub, you know, in the country by standing outside on a given evening. You'd certainly find, you know, one or two people leaving who would be slightly over the limit.
Larry in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, Brian? Listen, there's a great Irish pub in New York City. You all know it. It's McSorley's. They don't have a TV, but once in a while, you go there, you'll meet all types of interesting people. I've been going there 30 years. I have friends there. It's the friendliest place. It's sort of a community place, particularly if you go in the afternoon, maybe after 3, when it's not so crowded. The light streams in on a sunny day. It hasn't changed real much since 1854 when it started.
Do they still
there's no arugula.
Do they still serve saltines?
They serve saltines. They serve cheese, onions, sawdust on the floor, pub food. It's a very unassuming place. It really is. It's a very unhip place, which is why it's such a great place to go.
Larry,
I highly recommend it.
Thank you very much.
You
That's
bet.
Larry, the proprietor of McSorley's, no doubt. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, there
McSorley's is probably the most, you know, as far as I know in New York, would be the most similar to a traditional Irish pub.
Yeah, and it's certainly the most well-known here, but all over New York City still, there are little hole-in-the-wall pubs called the Shamrock or the Four-Leaf Clover or, you know, anything like that. And maybe they're more common in New York and in Boston than they are in Dublin at this point. I don't know.
Well, they may well be. I mean, there are lots of there. But in the book, I sort of divide pubs into three categories. The true traditional pub is the one we've been talking about. And then there are sort of museum pieces, which would be, you know, famous pubs like McDade's, which was a great literary hangout in the post-war years, that's been kept, you know, much as it looked. But at the same time, the clientele would be a largely, or a, say, 50-50 tourists and downtown business people. And then third, there are what I call neighborhood bars, and they might be the closest to, you know, the Shamrock kind of deal.
Although, to my eye, the clientele of these neighborhood bars are largely old Irish men who are immigrants or children of immigrants, and the next generation is not interested in that kind of scene. In fact, maybe you heard last year about one Irish bar in New York that decided to ban the song Danny Boy for St. Patrick's Day and beyond, because it just reeked of a kind of shallow nostalgia that they didn't want to be associated with anymore.
No, I think that's right. And you won't hear Danny Boy in any good Irish pub either.
All right. Let's,
you know, a visiting tourist who's singing, you know.
So before you go, now that Ireland is back to a good old recession like in the 80s, are people going back to the pubs?
You know, I think they will, because it's a bit like people, you know, in economic downturns. It's like the movies, you know, you can see it here, suddenly doing big business. So the pub again becomes, you know, are you going to spend your 50 euros on a dinner, or go to the pub and have a sandwich and a couple of pints for 15, you know? It's a cheap form of entertainment. So, and people like to be, you know, pubs, a good pub is a carefree kind of place. And when everybody's in misery, you know, it's good to be around other miserable people
now,
trying to be happy.
That's for sure. Now, don't go quite yet, because David in Yorkville wants to talk back to Larry about McSorley's. Hi, David.
Hello. I couldn't help but laugh when he said that nothing's changed in McSorley's in a long time. In 1965, Mayor Lindsay integrated McSorley's. By that, I mean he allowed women in. He forced them to accept women customers. McSorley's had been an all-male bar for the previous, 100 years, I guess. And after the 1964 Civil Rights Act, there was pressure to apply civil rights to McSorley's.
There you go. I'm glad you threw in that piece of history. Did anything like that take place or need to take place in Ireland, Bill?
Oh, it did indeed, yeah. I've forgotten the exact year, but there was a law passed I mean, until then, and really until well into the 80s, you know, women could go into some pubs would ban them. I mean, just irregardless. Others would allow them in, but only to sort of sit in a snug, which is a kind of, you know, closed-off, screened-off spot, so that they wouldn't offend the men who were drinking, you know. But there was a law passed that said that the same sort of thing, you know, it is the right of a woman to be served.
And wait a minute, Tony in Manhattan has a delicacy question. Hi, Tony.
Hi. At this time of year, in Dublin, for most of the 20th century, the item of choice for lunch would be a plate of button mushrooms cooked in butter. Can you still get that?
I haven't seen a plate of button mushrooms for a long time. I think it's gone the way of, you know, the cheese jar that Flann O'Brien said, you know, made a pub, it would be the sign of a pub. You see the blue bottle flies circling around it, you know.
All right. Tony, thanks for your call. And Bill Barich, thank you very much. That's B-A-R-I-C-H, Bill Barich from Dublin, author of A Pint of Plain, Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we're going to go to Ken Lovett from the Daily News up in Albany, where we are getting dueling news conferences about the fate of the MTA, draconian fare hikes and service cuts. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we'll find out. Stay with us.